Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. I'm Jason Abrams, and this is the place where we lift the curtain on the world of real estate like never before. Every week, I sit down with visionaries, pirates, and mavericks. We're here to document, demonstrate, and most importantly, demystify their game-changing models and systems. What secrets propel them to the top, and how are they living their dreams? This is about passion, it's about strategy, but above all, it's about real, tangible success. So buckle up and let's dive in. This is the Millionaire Real Estate Agent Podcast. And you're back. Hello, friends. I'm happy to be here with you, and I am wildly excited about today. We are going to be covering all things real estate with none other than Ben Kinney. Now, if you don't know who he is the co-founder of one of the largest real estate teams on the planet and a tech entrepreneur. We are going to cover I'm a new agent, how do I get into production, to I'm just bringing the first piece of leverage in my life, all the way through I'm the CEO of a seventh level company. It is going to be a wild ride. Buckle up, friends. This is Ben Kinney. Ben, how are you, sir?
Awesome. Thanks, everybody, and thanks for inviting me.
It's an honor to have you. Ben, I have the pleasure of knowing the story. It's easy, though, to start with where you are today. Looking back, I want to go a different route, if you could. I'd like to start at the very beginning. How did you find residential real estate?
I found residential real estate in kind of a interesting way. I was installing cable TV, and I show up at this lady's house. Her name was Paula. She was a school teacher. And she said, I just bought this place. And I looked at Paula, and I said, I love your condo. And Jason knows this, but I grew up in a poor situation. I was in a single wide trailer with my mom, or this little tiny cabin with my dad, both of which was rented. They didn't own either one of them. And so I didn't really know a lot about real estate at that point. She said, it's not a condo, it's a duplex. So I looked at her and said, well, what's a duplex? She said, I own both sides. And being a little emotionally unintelligent then and still now probably, I said, well, why didn't you just buy a house, Paula? And she said one of the most profound statements of my life and my career. She said, because the neighbor's rent covers 100% of my mortgage. And I thought to myself, this lady lives for free. And like, not only does she own real estate, which I had never had and my parents never did, but she actually owns real estate and she lives for free. So I left there with this idea that I wanted to do that. And I said, well, how do I do that myself? And she said, well, you need to go talk to a mortgage person. You need to talk to a real estate agent. So to make a really long story short, I worked with a real estate agent. He didn't do a great job. He kept trying to show me homes and condos, but I wanted the two unit thing. I wanted it for free. I wanted to live for free. So I found a couple of duplexes that were not for sale. I called the owners myself and asked them if they would sell. I found somebody that said he would sell, and I called my first real estate agent and said, hey, would you write an offer on this place? I want to offer 227 because I was approved at 230. And he said, it's too low. You'll never get it. So I hung up the phone kind of discouraged. And funny enough, I only knew one other real estate agent. She was the wife of another cable guy, and she lived three counties south, Jason. And she happened to be a Keller Williams agent in the Keller Williams Everett office named Catherine. And I called her and said, hey, I found a place. The owner's willing to sell. It's not on the market. I want to offer 227. And will you make an offer? And she did. And the guy accepted without counter. And I bought the house for $227,000. And she got the commission, and I moved into my duplex. And when I moved into the duplex, I wanted this goal of living for free, and my mortgage was at 5%, which my mortgage person said was the lowest rate you'd ever see in your life, which a couple of years ago we learned that wasn't true. And my renters next door paid $1,200 and my mortgage was $1,210. So I didn't quite get my free, but within 10 bucks, I was right there. Well, Catherine, who by the way was and is a great real estate agent, still in my office today. She gave me one of the best gifts of my life. She gave me Gary Keller and Jay Papazan's and Dave Jenks' book, The Millionaire Real Estate Agent. And she said, Ben, if you can, at that time I was selling cable TV door to door. So I was knocking on doors and cold calling people to sell them cable. Then I would go install it afterwards. She said, if you can do that to make 10 bucks, which is what I got for a commission when I did that, you'd probably do decent in real estate and you should read this book. And that got me to go get my real estate license and quit my job as a cable guy and start my career in real estate, which, funny enough, Jason, is 20 years ago this year. It was in 2004.
Well, happy anniversary, my friend. That is so crazy. So there were direct parallels between selling cable TV and selling real estate.
Yeah, for sure. I consider it my competitive advantage. When you've knocked 40,000 doors and you've cold called 250,000 people before day one in real estate, you understand that no's are not a life sentence, that no's are not the worst thing that could happen to you, that I've got more swear words, more hangups, more door slams than most people experience in their life. And I got it before I started day one in real estate. So in real estate, it was pretty easy. I knew that I had to get 50 no's every single day to get to my first yes. And that's what I worked towards.
Does that idea still hold true today?
Oh, I believe so. I think we're a little bit more efficient with technology and with marketing tools and having good CRMs and things like that. But yeah, I think there is a recipe for each type of contact you make that you'll be able to figure out as a top real estate professional over time. How many sphere touches does it take to get a deal? How many circle prospecting touches does it take to get a deal? How many canceled expireds? How many internet leads? And it varies by source. But yeah, I set off with an idea that there was a mathematical equation to success really early in my career.
Well, Gary, and by the way, if you're new to the program, when we say Gary, we're talking about Gary Keller. Ben mentioned Jay Papasan. The book they wrote is the namesake for this show. It's The MREA Real Estate Agent. And in it, Ben, they make the argument that the path is in the math. And far too few real estate agents acknowledge that. Why do you think that is?
I think that we get into good times in the economy and we underestimate how much of our success is luck. And because of that, when things get hard, we don't relate back to the math that we did when we got started. I talked to a great real estate professional at Keller in Minnesota the other day. His name is Ryan Hansen, and he's arguably one of the most productive real estate professionals I've ever met in my life. He did 180 personal transactions himself last year.
Oh my gosh.
Where he was the agent. Plus he has a real estate team, but he did 180 himself, which you and I know is insane. And I said, well, where'd your business come from? And he said, well, 61.4%, pretty accurate, came from Sphere. And I said, well, how would I translate that into teaching, you know, my agents how to get that amount of Sphere business? And he started off with kind of a fluffy answer about relationships and rapport building and so on. I said, no, break it down. What did you actually do? What's your competitive advantage? And he said, I had 20 quality real estate conversations every day for 17 years. And people underestimate the value of planting seeds over a long period of time. And if you all listening to this podcast said, well, what is the thing holding me back from success? It's having 20 quality real estate conversations every single day, or getting your team to have 20 quality real estate conversations every single day. Or as you transition into the MREA model, it's about having 20 amazing career conversations about a career in real estate every single day. If you did that, you would do as much business as you ever dreamed.
I'm so right. You know, this idea that real estate conversations lead to either additions to the database or appointments, and appointments are going to lead to appointments kept, and appointments kept are going to lead to listings signed, and listings signed are going to lead to solds. And the reality is, Ben, if you live at the top of that funnel and all you did was think about the number of quality conversations, not contacts, but real conversations, you'd be light years ahead.
Yeah, I did this something funny in my career as I tracked it. I wrote 1 to 100 on a piece of paper, and then I photocopied it. And every time I made a dial, I'd put a slash through that number. And every time somebody answered, I put an X through it. And every time I got an appointment, I would circle the number. And over days and weeks and months of doing that, I realized for me back then, it was 52 dials. I'd talk to 13 to 15 people and I would get one appointment. That was my ratio when I started. Over time, I needed to have less conversations to get more appointments because I just became better at using my words and overcoming objections and presenting my value proposition. And it got easier. But in the beginning, it was 52 dials to generate one appointment.
Well, so this begs the next question. Looking back, I guess on your anniversary day, looking back over 20 years, what's the cumulative knowledge you've acquired? If I'm a real estate agent today, what do I need to be doing? What if you could go back in time, I guess, what do you do different?
If I knew now, back then, I guess is kind of how we're answering that. I guess it would depend on where I'm at in my career. And I know that this is truly a podcast for business owners, people that want to move from being a salesperson to being a business owner, which is basically what, in my mind, what the MRAA book teaches us is how to transform from being an agent to being a business owner. I would still break that answer down into segments of your success. Like for an agent that's new, if you're listening, or for a team owner that has agents that are new on their team, I would give one piece of advice. And then there's the middle group, and then there's the last group.
Let's do it. Let's start with new, or I have agents on my team that are new. What do they need to know?
I put everything in list. Like Gary draws everything in triangles. I put everything in list of three or four things. And I call this my real estate success principles. And if you do these three things, you can be as successful as you want to be. Number one, Say the right things. So this is truly a scripts issue. And a lot of people don't like the word scripts, so I could rephrase that and say words that work. Can you figure out the words that work best for your business with the type of people that you're reaching out to? And if you're saying the right things, you can be successful in real estate if you do the number two and the number three thing. So the number two thing in the real estate success principles is say it enough times. So that is the job aspect of our world. I don't think a lot of people treat real estate like a job like they did in the career they did previously. Because our current job, if we showed up at 8 a.m. and we left early every single day, we would get fired.
Yes.
But we don't fire ourselves from our real estate business. We just leave early and we don't, you know, count any actions from it. So what I tend to do in say it enough times is come up with a standard for my life on what I'm going to do. And on my team, it's simple. We all reach out to our sphere once a month. We all dial 100 to 150 people a day that we don't know or that are, you know, maybe not our Mets, so to speak, as the MRAA book would say. And then we all do two open houses a week. On top of those three things, we also follow up with all of our leads that are in our database, our internet leads, our sign calls, our hot and ready people. But if you did those things and you had enough conversations with those people, you could basically guarantee success in real estate if you were saying the right things and say it enough times. The third thing is have enough people to say it to. And that's really a leads issue. So if you don't have enough leads, then maybe you should join a team. If you have a team, you should make sure that you have enough leads going to support the people that are in your database or have enough open house opportunities or make sure they start on day one with their sphere list or give them the tools to circle prospect or to door knock or whatever. But basically it's those three things. If you say the right things, say it enough times and have enough people to say it to, you can guarantee success in real estate. It's everybody's going to sell 24 to 48 homes a year.
Friends, I'm jumping in. I can't help myself. I was just going to let the tape run, but I'm listening to it and I'm sitting here in my office and I had to stop you. Do you hear the simplicity of what Ben is describing? I mean, the fact of the matter is that if you have the people to talk to, that you talk to them enough and you be able to provide value, you literally have the equation to go out and live your wildest real estate dreams. I mean, think about contacting every single person in your SOI once a month. Then spending the time in a TCPA-friendly way, talking to 150 other people to make sure your SOI is growing, and then simply doing two open houses a week. The interesting thing about it is I believe that's an equation that anybody listening can go start tomorrow. It doesn't take some wild amount of information. It doesn't take, you don't have to go make some huge capital investment. You don't have to like do a rain dance and hope that that works out. You just have to take the initiative. The genius of this system is the simplicity of the idea. I love it. Ben, it's crazy to me how simple the recipe that you just laid out is. And then I'm always left with the same question. That's so simple, and yet so many people will choose not to do it. And am I crazy, Ben, for banging my head against the wall and thinking I'm going to change that?
I don't know.
Doesn't it make you nuts?
How'd you do in school, Jason? I've never asked you this, but like, were you an A student, a B student, or a C student?
I took more of a 5-year journey through high school and graduated with a 1.8 GPA. Okay. They don't let people like me be lawyers or doctors, it turns out.
So you and me, like I was pretty dyslexic all through elementary school, middle school, and high school. And I stuttered a lot. I was not an A student by any means. If I did good, it was a B for Ben. And I think some of the beauty of not being an A student is that we simplify things. And I think that people who don't simplify things end up complicating things to justify their inaction.
Wow.
And if you want to get into action, you simplify things. So how do we put things in the simplest list, in the simplest triangle? How do you make things simple so we could take action? That might be the secret to success.
I love that. Gary's fond of saying that the best things in life are the most simple, and yet everything naturally wants to become more complicated.
Especially when we get bored. When we get bored, we go and we start adding complications to it. Yeah.
All right. So that's group number one. What's group number two?
Well, group number two is, let's say I'm a big fan of the MREA book, but if I could summarize the MREA book in a sentence or two, here's how I'd summarize it. We must incrementally, step by step, remove ourselves from each aspect of the transaction based first on its equivalent hourly rate. That is what I think the MREA book stands for, meaning you must step by step get further and further away from the task that you could pay somebody else a little bit less to do so that you could free up your time to do things that generate more revenue for the business. That, in my mind, is the organizational model, the economic model, the lead gen model. That is what MREA means to me, as was taught to me by Gary and Jay and Dave. So that next level is about giving up those things first that maybe you're not the best at or that slow you down from making the money in real estate, which is working with buyers and sellers, growing your database, or hiring people. For me, since I read the book early in my career, it was hiring an assistant. And after I hired an assistant, it was getting the buyers off of my plate so that I hired a buyer's agent so I could focus on the highest dollar productive activity I could think of at the time, which was working with listings. And that catapulted my business. You know, I went from selling 26 homes to selling 84 by just hiring an assistant. And it's simply because I was horrible at everything that she was great at. And I was spending half of my day doing things that I was non-functional at when I could have been spending that time on the phone, door knocking, doing opens, or getting more deals done. Well, I went from 84 transactions to 143 because I got rid of the buyers that were on my plate. Because Gary said that you could either work with 8 buyers at a time or 40 sellers. And I knew the math on which one would pay better, so I gravitated towards working with sellers. So when you're thinking of that second group, it's how do I get things off of my plate that's slowing me down and holding me up from doing the activities that would make me a higher amount of money per hour?
I heard a speech that you gave, and you were talking about this maturation through the number of units as you brought more leverage into your life. And then you got to a point where you brought leverage into your personal life. You had hired someone to start taking care of things at home. And it seems like that's when it kind of went nuclear. Like all of a sudden you were the best version of you.
Yeah. That individual you're talking about, Erin, started with me 12 or 13 years ago. She's still with me today. She transformed my life. I didn't realize when I read the MREA book that sentence I used to explain it was also relative in my home and in the other areas of my life. But when I started to understand that I should have leverage in all the areas of my life that I don't enjoy or all the areas of my life that slow me down, it really unlocked some of my potential. I would come home at night and my power would be shut off or my water would be shut off, not because I didn't have money, but because I didn't like opening my mail or I didn't deal with things. Or I'd have stuff at the dry cleaners for months that I forgot to pick up, or it was just chaos because I was spending so much time, you know, in other areas of my life. So I definitely needed that person for sure.
That's so good. Okay, that's group two. This third group, I got to think these are the highest producers in the world.
Yeah, and when I think about this, I came up with my fourth real estate success principle. And this is related to any individual that can get past the 24 to 48 transaction a year ceiling. And once you transcend past that, you're most likely doing it through leverage, unless you're a Ryan Hansen or an Amber Kimmel, some of these people inside our ecosystem that just crush it selling an enormous amount themselves. You need enough people saying it. So the fourth real success principle is have enough people saying it. I remember sitting in a room, a mastermind in Austin, and I think it was Gary that said this, but I'll give you the scenario. Basically, somebody holds up a phone book and shows it to me and says, "Hey, if Ben, do you think you could go through this phone book and find at least, this is a phone book of Austin, which I didn't live and I didn't know anybody, right? Could you go through this Austin phone book and call down there and find somebody that wanted to list their house?" And I said, "Yeah, I have 100% confidence that today, if you started me at 8, by 8 p.m., I would set 1, 2, or 3 listing appointments strictly from the phone book. I have 100% confidence I could do that." And I think it was Gary that said, "Okay, and could you do it again tomorrow?" I said, "Yeah, it's a big phone book. I could do it basically every single day." And he said, "Would you make a lot of money?" And I said, "Yeah, I would." He said, "What would your average commission be?" And I'm making it up back then because it was a long time ago. It might be $10,000 a day that I would make by representing those sellers and helping them sell their home. And he said, "That's a lot of money." And I said, "Yep, it is." And he said, "Well, that's the problem." I said, "What's the problem?" He said, "Well, people think that's a lot of money." He said, "Let me ask you a different question. What if you went back through that same phone book and you called every single day trying to find somebody that was willing to call through the phone book every single day and make $5,000 on every one of those listings, and you kept the other 5. And I realized that my potential would be unlocked if I moved my lead generation activities from finding sellers to finding people that were willing to find buyers and sellers. And I think that is really where you saw the trajectory of my business, my real estate business, and all my businesses transform. It was about, as we say in our world, finding the who, getting in front of the right person and finding people that are willing to work hard within your values and ethics and models and systems. And that's where the business really took off.
So when you hear agents, and you and I interview agents all the time, and they say, "I don't want to deal with other people," because you try to say, "Okay, well, let's take the next step. Let's build out a business. Let's do this." And there's a large group out there. And by the way, if that's one of y'all, you're perfect just the way you are. But Ben, why do you think people take that approach and say, "You know what? I don't want to bring leverage in. I don't want to deal with other people." Why is this idea so difficult?
We don't want to put judgment on somebody that says that. However, the challenge with that is that means you're going to be selling real estate, doing the same thing for the rest of your life. And if you're happy doing that, more power to you, you should do that. But if you think at any point in the future, you may want to spend more time with your honey bunny or with your kids or travel in the world, then you need to move into creating leverage. But it's like a little bit like dating. If most people didn't meet their love of their life on day one, never meet anybody else, marry them and stay together forever. Like most of us had a couple of bad dates and a couple of bad relationships. And then we get back up and we go and we find the right person in our lives. But hiring is a lot like that too. Some of these people hired one person, an assistant or a showing specialist or buyer's agent, and it didn't work out. And then they walk and say, "Well, that doesn't work for me." And they never try to do it again. But you wouldn't do that in your personal life, right? So I think some of us just have to get back up after a couple of bad hires and learn the mistakes that we made and keep trying until we find that person. The reality is that none of us are an amazing leader of a marginal hire. And we make a marginal hire, we start sitting back and saying, "Gosh, I suck at this. I'm a poor leader. I shouldn't be doing this. I should just go back into personal production and sell myself." But if you made a great hire, you'd be looking up and saying, well, I'm a genius. I'm really good at this. I'm amazing. But the reality is you just hired an incredibly accountable, hardworking, good human. And those people make you look like a genius. And we need to spend more time finding ones like that.
I think that's right. I don't think anyone succeeds or fails alone. And so when you look up and you're driving a car right now, probably you didn't build it. You're wearing clothes. You didn't knit them. Unless you're using a Flowbee, you're having someone else cut your hair. So the fact of the matter is you're all living wildly leveraged lives. Why you decide to draw this line and say, well, it's okay to have leverage in some parts, but not others. That's where I get confused, because the model is the same. I wake up every day with problems. I either solve them with my own time and expertise, or I pay someone else to solve them. True. It's just that simple. As you look up now, this market's different than the last market, which is going to be different than the next market. And you have found a way to be successful regardless of what the external market conditions are. For my friends out there that are feeling the shift and are waxing poetically about how great it was 2 or 3 years ago, what do you tell them? What's the key to thriving through no matter what the market condition is?
Yeah. Can I give you another list?
Please. Yeah.
I have what I call like my fiduciary duties of a CEO. And for those listening to this podcast and building a big business, there's really four things that every CEO needs to do, especially during this time. And number one is find and attract talent in sales and operational roles. And you need to be consistently doing that. You got to be consistently building your bench because you never know when people are going to leave or get pregnant or die or move away or leave you or quit, or like you always need to be filling that. And if you knew the market was going to go down 30% and you added 30% more agents to your team, you actually were fine last year. But if the market went down 30% and you kept the same team in place, you probably went down 30%. And that's a challenge or a problem. The second duty of a CEO, which I think a lot of people mistake, especially those that hire a whole bunch of people really quick, is we have to get our people into production as fast as possible. Whether that's a TC or a VA or an admin or a sales agent on your team, we got to get them into production as quick as possible. In fact, my very first hire, Jalene, who's still with me today, 18 years later, Jalene created an agent launch program for us called our 86-day plan. In our 86-day launch, I asked her once, I said, Jalene, why is it not 90 days? And she said, because if they don't do what they're supposed to do, I 86 their butts off the team.
Wow.
Which kind of cracks me up. But really, it's a recipe for success where agents who join us have to go through a specific plan in the first 86 days that guarantees they're going to be having pendings and listings right away, so they don't, you know, in 3 months or 6 months go quit and get another job. So if you can get people into production as fast as possible, you're doing two of the four duties of a CEO. Number three, you got to retain the people that are producing at the highest level. So often we bring people into our world and we look up one day and they come in and say, hey, I know you fixed my car when it broke down and you bailed me out of jail when I got arrested and you helped me out when I was having a hard time and you listened to me cry and you helped me pay off my debt and all that kind of stuff. But now I'm going to go do this on my own. Thank you for everything. And it feels like a heart in our chest. All of us have been through that. But here's the reality is that most people, when they leave us, look up and say, I want to be Jason. But working with Jason, I don't see a pathway to becoming Jason unless I leave Jason. Hey, I want to be Ben. I want to have what Ben has, but I don't see a pathway of doing that while staying in business with Ben. So we got to make sure that we're building a world that's big enough that our people can have what we have and do what we do. And if not, we should expect everybody in our world to leave. So I think one of the duties of a CEO is to make sure we're providing opportunities and value props that keep people tied in and rewarded for their loyalty and commitment to the business that they're associated with. And that is a duty of all of us. And maybe you even say, here's the five people in my organization. What is my retention plan for first person? What is my retention plan for the second one? What's my retention plan for the third? Understanding that the first person just wants recognition. And the second person just wants more money. And the third person just wants prizes, iPads, and trips. And, you know, the fourth person just doesn't want to be fired. And you have to figure out what is their motivation and what is going to make them stay in your world for the longest period of time. And that's our duty as a CEO and a leader to figure that out. And the last duty of a CEO, of a leader, it's the worst one. I call it the boring stuff. It's making sure your business has a budget, a P&L, good contracts, legal agreements, great marketing, great design, your technology is implemented, your systems are in place, you have a great listing presentation, a buyer consult, you have scripts and dialogues that all your team does. John Maxwell says systems make the ordinary extraordinary. Do you have a system for every single thing in your business? And that is our duty as a CEO, is to provide the recipe for success. We're basically building little McDonald's franchises where people get to come in and make the perfect cheeseburger. I like cheeseburgers, so that's why. And they come in and build that perfect cheeseburger. That's our duty as a CEO to provide those things. If we're doing those four things, the market shouldn't affect our business. We could go up and down as the number of units decrease, but we should still be outperforming everybody else in our market. And if we're not, I bet you one of those four things is broken, if not two or three.
I think that's genius. I love the simplicity of that. I got one more question, and then I'm going to invite you to our lightning round. 20 years in the real estate industry is an awful long time. And there has to be days when you just don't feel like doing it, because I'm yet to interview anybody who wakes up and feels like Superman every day. Ben, someone listening to our show today is having that day. On those for you, how do you get through them? How have you persevered?
That's such a good question, Jason. Somebody asked me once why I didn't sell one of my businesses that I own. And I looked them in the eye and I laughed and I said, honestly, because nobody called me on the right day. Because there's probably lots of days I would have said, you know what, you can freaking have this thing. I'll pay you, actually. So that's one answer. But here's the real truth. When you invite people in your business that you care about outside of yourself, you get up on the days that you don't want to get up. And when I started bringing in people like Jalene and Tamara and Jacqueline and all these amazing people that I call my friends and partners, on the days I don't want to show up, I still show up, because it's not about me. And I think a lot of people have that when they have children or they have a spouse or they have, you know, a bigger why in their world. I didn't have those things, but I had the people in my organization that made me show up when I didn't want to. And then my last comment on that, Jason, would be wanting to quit is natural. And wanting to quit is normal. And I don't know anybody that performs at a high level that doesn't wake up some days and say, this is BS. What the heck am I doing? I should go sell watermelons on a beach in Costa Rica. And once you realize that, and you put yourself in masterminds and communities and with a coach that makes you feel normal when you're going through those emotions, you can persevere. But when you stay hidden in your closet and your bedroom in the dark or whatever it might be, and you're just kind of wallowing and you can't find other people to say, oh, this is actually normal, it feels a lot harder. But once you realize that all of us want to quit and all of us think this is BS sometimes, you're like, okay, if they push through, so could I, and we keep going.
I love it. Ben, you are not allowed to steal my watermelon in Costa Rica plan B. I have the patent on that one, and I can't tell you how close I am, my friend. We want to invite you to the lightning round. This is where we will ask you a series of questions. We want the first thing that comes to the top of your head. Ben Kinney, will you join us?
Oh, I would love to, and it's scary.
Ben, what is your favorite color?
Blue.
What is your favorite food?
Cheeseburgers.
Stop the lightning round. I knew you were going to say it because I'm a cheeseburger sneaker myself. Ben, where is the best cheeseburger? You've been all over the world.
In Chicago and in Manhattan, there's a restaurant called Au Cheval, AU CHEVAL. It is ranked by the USA Today, the number one cheeseburger in America. It's really, really awesome. In Scottsdale, Arizona, there's a place called Paradise Valley Burger, and they have something called the Creme Brulee Burger. It is definitely in my top five burgers. I have actually a photo album in my phone, Jason, of my favorite burgers that I've ever had. In London, there's a place called Burger and Lobster where they literally serve a whole lobster and a cheeseburger on the same plate, which is incredible. So I have a handful of favorite cheeseburgers around the world, but I could also be perfectly happy going with you to In-N-Out and just crushing an In-N-Out burger or a Dick's cheeseburger in Seattle. Like a simple one wrapped in paper is also really good for me.
It's fantastic. All right, back into the lightning round.
Okay.
What's the sound that you love? What's the noise that you love listening to?
You know, I spent a lot of time in the wilderness and in the woods. In fact, remember that time that you and I were chasing emus up a road in Texas?
Yes.
I remember that the other day. The first couple of days that you're in the woods, you don't really hear anything. But on day three or day four, you start hearing the chipmunks and the squirrels, and you start hearing the birds rustling, and you stop looking at your phone, and you start hearing the woodpeckers, and you hear the footsteps, and you just really start hearing the water trickling and the wind blowing in the leaves. And being in the woods after a day or two when my mind is clear of the work and the stress and the life, I love hearing what happens in the wilderness when I'm just perfectly silent standing there.
I love that. What's your favorite movie?
Good Will Hunting.
Stop the lightning round. Dude, you're the third person to mention. That's a great movie.
It's one of the best movies ever. I would also say Rad, which is an 80s BMX movie, and Red Dawn. It was like the Russians and Cubans invade America. So those three.
By the way, if you haven't seen the BMX movie, because I happen to know, then you don't know until you know. That's a fantastic film.
Yeah, I've actually become great friends with the star of that movie. He played Crew Jones, but the actor is named Bill Allen, and he's a great human. In fact, I'm reading a transcript right now in my house of a remake of Rad. So there, you got to get caught up on the 80s version, and then there might be a remake coming.
All I know is I wanted to buy blue and white checkered BMX bikes right after that movie came out. Is there a book, doesn't have to be a recent one, but is there one that you would tell everyone to read? Is there just one that stands out? Doesn't have to be MREA, but is there a book that you have on your shelf that you constantly mention?
You know, Gary and Jay did a really good job of cramming books down our throats, yours and mine. And, you know, I don't think I ever left Gary's office without a handful of books and a couple new pairs of socks, you know, and whenever I went to Jay, like I always left with a book recommendation or a book in my hand. It was just the culture that was created. And I don't think I can name one because it's just not fair, but The Simple Path to Wealth, The Psychology of Money, those are phenomenal books when it comes to investing. Probably some of my favorite books of all time is Influence by Robert B. Cialdini, an amazing book. But probably my favorite one that I tell people right now is The Almanac of Naval.
Is there a podcast other than ours or yours, or is there a voice in your head that you like to listen to?
Other than Brian Gubernick's No Days Off podcast, I love How I Built This. In fact, it was the first podcast to ever make me cry, was listening to the story of Sarah Blakely talk about her career of building Spanx. And
yeah.
You know, when I heard Sarah's story, she was 8 years into building Spanx, you know, selling fax machines door to door, getting her butt kicked up and down. And I kept thinking to myself, she didn't have mediocre success for like 6, 8, 10 years. And then she had astronomical, crazy success after that. And I was 6 years into one of my ventures. And I just thought to myself, like, quit being a baby, like, keep going. Like, when you hear the How I Built This podcast and you listen to all the different founders that have built their businesses, they're 8 or 10 year overnight successes. And all we hear is the overnight success, but we forget the 8 to 10 years that they put into it. And that brings me down to understanding. My last podcast would be a Business Wars, like understanding between like Pizza Hut and Domino's, Nike and Adidas. And the stories of that, I think those are really, really phenomenal. I love studying businesses.
I think it's so interesting. Whenever I hear Gary or Mo talk about Keller Williams, they'll say, and from 83 to 89, this happened. And then 89 to 99, this happened. And then 2000 to 2020, this happened. And you're just thinking, oh my gosh, over 40 years, this thing is born. Because it's easy to look up and overestimate today and underestimate the value of time.
That's right.
Spot on. Ben, thank you so much for being on the show. You're such a great friend to the real estate industry and agents across all different brands. on behalf of a very, very grateful industry. Thank you for everything you've done. More importantly, thank you for everything that you will do.
Thank you, my friend. And I appreciate the invite of being on here.
There it is. Put it in the books. That is one for the ages. Do you realize covering from a brand new agent all the way through the four things that a CEO needs to do to be at the seventh level and run at the highest level? Do you realize the amount of ground that we just captured? Now, here's what I'm taken with as I listen. Number one, this man knows cheeseburgers. You want to talk about where to get them? He knows. Number two, him and Gary Keller have something in common. They probably have several things in common, but you know the one that stands out to me? Both of these guys know exactly what matters most to them. They're able to take wildly complex ideas and turn them into simple lists, simple models, so that they know what to spend their time on. Gary Keller told me that the most powerful force in the universe is focus. And when a person focuses on something with complete intentionality, anything is possible. I want to tell you something, and I want you to believe me. You can be anywhere that you want to be within 5 years. I promise you that's true. Listen to Ben. This dude is making phone calls and installing cable TV. He has now climbed the mountain that is residential real estate. Gary Keller is literally sitting there when the market is imploding in the 80s, trying to figure out what to do. 5 years later, he's the number one broker in Austin, Texas, never to give that title back, even to this very day. You can be anywhere you want to be. The question, will you spend enough time to figure out exactly what needs to be done? Then will you have the time and the focus to do it? And most importantly, the resolve to do it every single day, because on the other side of boredom, that's where success lives. Friends, go forth and do likewise. And there it is. That wraps another episode. Friends, I don't know what you're taking out of this. I really don't. I'll tell you what I want you to be taking out of it, which is these are the people that are having tremendously big lives. And the reason it's happening is because they're setting up the models and systems to do just that. Gary Keller told me that leadership is teaching people how to think so that they do the things they need to do when they need to do them, so that ultimately they get the things they want when they want to have them. And that's what I want for you. You're all leaders, but it begins with leading ourselves. If you're enjoying this podcast, I want you to click the subscribe button anywhere that you get your podcasts. We want to be the voice in your head every single week. And every week, we're dropping new content. We also send out a newsletter at the conclusion of every show to make sure that you get the highest points and the models and systems that were discussed. So if you want to sign up, I need your name and your email address. Head over to themillionaireagentpodcast.com. MillionaireAgentPodcast.com. Enter your name and your email address, and every week that newsletter will be in your box. Friends, you just went on a journey. I hope that what happens between now and the next time we meet is absolutely wonderful for you. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next week.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not KWRI and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information. Warning. You must comply with the TCPA and any other federal, state, or local laws, including for B2B calls and texts. Never call or text a number on any do not call list, and do not use an auto dialer or artificial voice or pre-recorded messages without proper consent. Contact your attorney to ensure your compliance.